people have a tendency of getting confused when they talk about the Yom Tov. They get a sense that halachas of Yom Tov are much more lenient than those of Shabbos, so they think that things are generally mutter. The truth is, the Gemara in Beis already points this out. The Gemara in Daf Beis, in Masechta Beis, says that Chazal were more stringent when it came to Hilchas Yom Tov as opposed to Hilchas Shabbos, precisely for this reason. People are mezalzel in Hilchas Yom Tov because they think it's so lenient. We know that there are special heterim that exist on Yom Tov which don't exist on Shabbos. So people think that everything is permissible on Yom Tov. It's not the case. So let's examine some of Hilchas Yom Tov today and get a better sense as to what is mutter. And it's no question there are extra heterim on Yom Tov that exist on Shabbos. But let's get a better sense as to what is mutter and what is actually osir. We all know the Mishnah in Megillah on Daf Zayin sets forth the famous principle that ein ben Yom Tov l'Shabbos ela ochel nefesh bilvad. The real difference, the only difference, as the Mishnah says, between Yom Tov and Shabbos is that malacha, any creative work that's done for the purpose of ochel nefesh, for the purpose of eating, is permissible on Yom Tov, but forbidden on Shabbos. We know that on Shabbos there are lamed test malachos, there are 39 categories of creative work that are patterned after those malachos, those actions that were done in the Mishkan. So all 39 malachos are asur on Shabbos, but on Yom Tov, malachos that are for the purpose of ochel nefesh, for the purpose of letting a person eat, those are going to be permissible on Yom Tov. What's the source for this principle? It's a pasuk in Parashas Bo. Pasuk, when it's talking about the Yom Tov of Pesach, it says that one is not allowed to do any malach on Yom Tov. But ach asher ye'ochel l'chol nefesh, hu levado ye'osel lochem. What is necessary for ochel nefesh, that alone can be done for you. So the pasuk says explicitly that ochel nefesh is mutter on Yom Tov. The question is, what is ochel nefesh? What is included within this heter of ochel nefesh? So at first glance, you'd say everything. Anything that you're doing for the purpose of ochel nefesh, that's included in the heter. Not so fast. You see from Mishnayos and from Gemaras and Masechta Beitza that the heter is a little bit limited. The special leniency of ochel nefesh on Yom Tov is not as expansive as one would have imagined. For instance, we find the Mishnah in the beginning of the third parak of Beitza. The Mishnah says that one is not allowed to fish on Yom Tov. Why shouldn't one be allowed to fish? You're not allowed to hunt the fish. Tzeda is a malacha d'araisa, one of the lamentest malachas on Shabbos. But presumably, if one is tzad, one is hunting for the purpose of ochel nefesh on Yom Tov, that should be mutter. Why should the Mishnah say that you're not allowed to be tzad dogim from the bibrim b'yom Tov? From the corrals, from the areas where the fish are, you're not allowed to hunt the fish. Why not? It's for the purpose of ochel nefesh. Secondly, the Gemara in Beitza on Daf Gimel, most of Hilchas Yom Tov is found in Masechta Beitza. So the Gemara in Beitza on Daf Gimel says one is not allowed to eat fruits that have fallen off the tree on Yom Tov, what we call peros hanoshrin. Peros that fell off of the tree on Yom Tov, one is not allowed to eat them, even though they're on the ground. They're not attached to the tree. Why can't you eat them on Yom Tov? Because there's a gezeira that if we allow you to eat these fruit, then you might think that you can climb the tree and cut the fruit off the tree. You could be tolesh, kotzer from the tree. Kotzer is another one of the lamites v'lachas. So the Gemara says there's a gezeira d'rabban, and the peros hanoshrim b'yom tov are aser, because there's a gezeira shemiyala v'yidlosh. Maybe you'll climb the tree, you'll go up onto the tree, and you'll cut off the tree from the tree. Once again, what's the gzeira? The gzeira is based on the fact that we're afraid you'll cut the fruit off the tree, but cutting the fruit off the tree itself should be mutter. It's for ochel nefesh, so why should that be a problem? These are the two questions that the Rishonim ask on this principle. We know that ochel nefesh is mutter on Yom Tov, so why should it be usur to do ktsira? Clearly, the gzeira peros hanoshrim assumes that there's an isur of kotzer on Yom Tov, an isur to cut something off, something that's growing on a tree when it's not allowed to cut off. And similarly, the Mishnah at the beginning of the third parak in Beitza assumes that Seida is asur on Yom Tov, even though that's for ochel nefesh at first glance. So Rishonim give two basic answers, two different answers. Tosfos quotes Yerushalmi. This is Tosfos on Daf Gimel in Beitza. Yerushalmi says that the only malachas that are mutter for the purpose of ochel nefesh are milisha ve'elech. Milisha ve'elech. Only malachas from kneading, the process of kneading, and onward. So that would mean kneading is mutter and cooking and baking is mutter. That severely limits the heter of ochel nefesh. So if only from kneading and on is going to be mutter, so anything from before the kneading stage, for example, cutting off the tree, cutting down the produce, cutting down the wheat in order to make it into bread, to knead it, etc., that's much before the stage of lisha. So lush is mutter, ofer, baking is mutter, bishul, cooking might be mutter, but kotzer will be asr. And similarly, seida, Seda in animals, hunting in animals, is the same type of malacha as kotzer is in tevua. Kotzer in growing items, right? Things that are growing from the ground. So just like kotzer would be asar on yamtiv, so too seda would be asar on yamtiv, because they're similar malachas, just a different series of actions, different context, but it's basically the same level malacha. So from this Yerushalmi, you get the impression that the heter of nefesh is very limited. Where did this Yerushalmi get this idea that for Isha Ba'elech is mutter and everything before that is aser? So the answer is, it explains. If you look at the Yerushalmi inside, Tosfos quotes the Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi itself explains that this pasuk in Parashat Bo is, of course, in the context of Pesach, and the psukim are there. They are talking about making of matzah. One of the rules when it comes to making of matzah, we know, is that the matzah has to be shmura. Shmartem es hamatzahs. One has to watch the matzah to make sure it doesn't become chametz. It's not enough to even know that it's not chametz. You can tell there are certain signs that the Gemara gives that we're not as expert in these signs as they were at the time of the Gemara. But the Gemara gives different signs that you can tell from the matzah itself whether it actually is chametz or not. That's not enough. Shmartem es hamatzahs tells us that we have to be proactive in the process. We have to be careful to make sure that this matzah is shmura, it's watched, we've taken care that it can't become chametz. From when do you have to take care? So we are machmer, actually, to have shmura mishas ketzira. We are careful to watch the grain once the wheat is cut. Me'ikar adin, though, strictly speaking, you only have to have shmura mishas lisha, only from the time of kneading. So that's the source that this Yerushalmi is based on. Yerushalmi is saying, look, if the pasuk that permits ochel nefesh on yamtiv is in the context of shmartem es hamatzahs, and we know that the concept of shmur relates from lisha ve'elech, so too the heter ochel nefesh should be governed by the same parameters. It should be limited by the same parameters. So if the concept of shmur matzah applies to lisha, so then the heter ochel nefesh should only apply from lisha and onward. This is one answer that's given to explain why kotzer and sud are osur on yamtiv. They're not included within ochel nefesh. That's because they're not from Lisha ve'elech, they're not from Lisha and onward, and the pasuk u'shmartem es hamatzos is linked to the heter ochel nefesh, and it limits the heter ochel nefesh only to those malachos that are from Lisha and onward. Rashi, at the beginning of the third parak in Beitzah, gives a different rationale. He explains the reason why kotzer and sod are not included in a different way. He says that the heter ochel nefesh is limited to only those malachos that you could not have done before Yom Tov. If you could do the malacha before Yom Tov, then there's no heter, there's no permission to do it on Yom Tov itself. So Rashi says, any time that the malacha, if done before Yom Tov, will not adversely affect the food item. And there are preparations that if you do them before Yom Tov, a little far, if it's far in advance before the meal, so the taste won't be as good. The taste will start to, it'll get a little bad overnight. Certainly, if you didn't have refrigeration, the taste might not be as good. So in those circumstances, Rashi would say, of course that's mutter on Yom Tov. The heter of Ochel Nefesh allows me to prepare food on Yom Tov, if by preparing it before Yom Tov, it won't be as good as it'll be on Yom Tov. But anything that can be done from before Yom Tov, Rashi claims, there's no heter of Ochel Nefesh. And that's how he explains why kotzer and sod are not included. You could fish the day before Yom Tov. Maybe you can't fish a few days if you can't refrigerate the fish or put it on ice. You can't fish 4 days before Yom Tov because the fish is not going to be fresh. But you can certainly fish Erev Yom Tov. You can fish just the day before Yom Tov and it'll still be just as good on Yom Tov. That's why it's usher to fish on Yom Tov itself, because that can be done from before Yom Tov. Similarly, you could cut the fruit off the tree the day before Yom Tov. You could even cut it off several days before Yom Tov, and it's just as good. Most of our fruit is cut off weeks before it gets to us, or certainly at least days before it gets to us. So Rashi claims the heter ochel nefesh only applies if it can only be done on Yom Tov, and it'll be just as good. But if it can be done from before Yom Tov, and it'll be just as good as if it were done on Yom Tov, then the heter ochel nefesh doesn't apply. So some of the other Rishonim ask on Rashi, how could that be? This distinction between efshar la'asosom Erev Yom Tov and Yevshel HaSosu Mibaod Yom, that distinction we find in the Gemara relating to other concepts, not Ochel Nefesh, but rather Machshire Ochel Nefesh. Machshirin are preparatory acts to the preparing for Ochel Nefesh itself. Ochel Nefesh itself is like cooking, baking, something like that. Machshirin means doing an act that's necessary in order to get to the Ochel Nefesh. For instance, sharpening a knife. That's the classical example. Shechita is ochel nefesh itself. Certainly in the time of the Gemara, if you shechted the animal the day before Yomtiv, it wouldn't be as good, it wouldn't be as fresh. So shechita is ochel nefesh itself, the shechting. But sharpening the knife for shechita, that's a hechsher, that's a preparatory act that you need in order to be able to shecht. That's only machshiri ochel nefesh. So some of the Rishonim, Tosis, and others ask on Rashi, says this distinction that Rashi makes between Efshel Asoso Erev Yomtiv and Efshel Asoso Erev Yomtiv, that the Gemara has regarding Machshirei Ochel Nefesh. If you can sharpen the knife before Yomtiv, then you're not allowed to sharpen the knife on Yomtiv itself. But where do we find such a distinction in the Psukim when it comes to Ochel Nefesh itself? Ochel Nefesh should be mutar on Yomtiv, whether you can do it before Yomtiv or you can't do it on Yomtiv. Where does Rashi come off to have such a distinction? So some suggest that Rashi agrees to Tosfos fundamentally. Rashi agrees to Tosfos that on a Daraisa level, min haTorah, there really is no distinction when it comes to Ochel Nefesh between something that you could do before Yomtiv and something you can't. What Rashi means to say is midrabanan, Chazal were machmir, that one is not allowed to do Malacha even for the purpose of Ochel Nefesh on Yomtiv if you could do it from before Yomtiv. And they point to the Rambam, who seems to echo a similar sentiment. The Rambam says that Chazal prohibited any malacha that you could do mibaod yom, that you could do from before Yomtiv, because they were afraid. If we allow you to do all the malachos for the purpose of Ochel Nefesh on Yomtiv, even things that you could do from before Yomtiv, so you're not going to have a Simchas Yomtiv, you're not going to enjoy Yomtiv, you'll spend your whole day cooking. So that's why Chazal said, you have to do everything that you could do from before Yomtiv. But those items, those actions that you can't do before Yomtiv, and it'll be as good on Yomtiv, those actions you're allowed to do on Yomtiv. Chazal limited it. So according to Rashi, it comes out that the reason why one is not allowed to be kotzer, you can't cut fruit off the tree on Yomtiv, and one is not allowed to hunt the fish on Yomtiv, to capture the fish on Yomtiv, that's an issur d'rabbanan, it's not a din d'oraisa. If you take the Yerushalmi that Tosfos quoted, Milisha ve'elef, that's a din d'oraisa, that's part of the Gzeiras HaKosuv, part of the special principle of Ochel Nefesh, that it's limited to the Malachos from Lisha and onward. But if you take Rashi's approach, it's a din d'rabbanan. Min haTorah, really, you should be able to do any malacha. As long as you can explain why it's for the purpose of Ochel Nefesh, it should be mutter to do any malacha on Yomtiv. Chazal limited it. Chazal didn't want you to be involved the entire Yomtiv in different malachos, even for the purpose of Ochel Nefesh, because they were afraid that it would limit your enjoyment of Yomtiv. So they said that only those malachos that you can't do b'ba'od Yom, only those malachos that you can't do Erev Yomtiv, those malachos you're allowed to do on Yomtiv itself. That's an extra din d'rabbanan on top of the original halacha. And the Ramah actually passes this way. The Ramah says that some amachmir, this is in Tov Tzadi Hei, the beginning of Hilchas Yomtiv, in Sif Aleph, the Ramah passes that some amachmir, that there's no heter of Ochel Nefesh, to do malacha if the taste of the item is not going to be adversely affected. If you did it before Yomtiv, if the taste is not going to be harmed, if it's not going to be damaged, if you do the malacha before Yomtiv, then you're required to do it before Yomtiv. This is quite an interesting idea. What would emerge if we're machmir for such a shita is that let's say a person really doesn't care to get fresh food. There are some individuals who are not so medactic. There are some who can't eat food that's not freshly cooked. But others are not, don't care as much. So then for those individuals, maybe you should have to cook the food from before Yomtiv. Who says that it's mutter to cook it on Yomtiv? It's very common for a balabasta, for a woman, before she goes off to shul on Yomtiv morning, she'll put up whatever, a chicken or meat, whatever they're going to eat for the Yomtiv meal, for lunch, she'll put it up before she goes to shul. Then it cooks for 2-3 hours. If someone can eat non-freshly cooked food and it doesn't really bother him, maybe according to Rashi's opinion, this person feels that the taste is just as good. According to Rashi's opinion, maybe he should have to cook it before Yomtiv. He can warm it up on Yomtiv, but he should have to perhaps cook it before Yomtiv. Some posts can say we don't have to go that far. I'll get to your question in a moment. Some posts say we don't have to go that far. But others want to say maybe there's another room for chumrah. Let's say there are some foods that we make that literally, if you prepare them before Yomtiv, they will be exactly the same as preparing them on Yomtiv itself. L'masha. Sometimes we make a cold pasta. You have a pasta salad. You're not going to have a hot noodles for that pasta salad. You have cold pasta. So if you cook the pasta, if you cook the noodles before Yomtiv, they'll be exactly the same if you refrigerate them as cooking them on Yomtiv. So according to this Rashi, what should be machmir to prepare noodles for a cold pasta salad on Yomtiv? What should be machmir to prepare them after before Yomtiv? Because there really is no nafka mina. There is no practical difference between preparing them before Yomtiv and preparing them on Yomtiv. And according to Rashi, the heter ochel nefesh only applies if it can't be done before Yomtiv. If it can be done before Yomtiv, then it'll be just as good. There's no heter ochel nefesh. So some actually are machmir for this. They try to prepare whatever they can. Whatever the b'nei bayis, whatever the people in the family are not machmir on, they don't care as much if it's prepared from before and it's cold. People try to prepare it from before. And even if they have to warm it up, if it'll be just as good, they try to prepare it before. Others are not as makbid. Either because they don't want to be machmir for this Rashi, they feel that even though the Ramah quotes the Yesh Machmirim, we're not beholden to that Yesh Machmirim. And the other reason is they claim that it's not as good. Some people are more medaktic in their food. So perhaps there's room to be megil to say that if a person is really medaktic in their food and it really is different, not like the cold pasta for the salad, but if something will really be different, if it's warmed up, so maybe there's a heter actually to cook it on Yom Tov and not to be machmir to cook it from before Yom Tov. Yes. Okay. So this explains what the basic definition of Ochel Nefesh is. And we actually talked about Machshirin as well, the preparatory stages for Ochel Nefesh. Is there any head there, any permissibility to do Malach on Yom Tov, not for the purpose of Ochel Nefesh? So that's a Mishnah in Beitzah also. The Mishnah on Daf Yud Beis and Beitzah calls Machlokas Beishameh Beisilo, whether one is allowed to carry in a Rishus Sarabim, to take out from a Rishus Hayochid into Rishus Sarabim, from a private domain to a public domain, not for the purpose of eating, but stam for enjoyment on Yom Tov. The case in the Mishnah is one allowed to take a child out, to take a katan out, into the public domain. Normally we assume a person is not allowed to carry both on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Hotsa'ah is one of the Lamates Malachos. So clearly Hotsa'ah for the purpose of Ochel Nefesh is going to be mutter. Let's say you're cooking a cholent in someone else's home. You don't have, your oven was broken from a full Yom Tov, so you borrow the other person's oven, you cook the cholent. Or let's say you do something you need for the purpose of Ochel Nefesh, you need to take from the other person's private Rishus Hayachid to your Rishus Hayachid, there at Rishus Harabim in the middle. There's some Rishus Harabim. The street, let's say, is Rishus Harabim. It's a public domain and there's no Erev in the community. And you want to take from someone else's Rishus Hayachid into your Rishus Hayachid through this public domain. So that on Shabbos is definitely Aser. That would violate the Issa Deraisa of Hotzah. The question is on Yom Tov, is that Mutter? Or to take a lulav, they talk about, or a sefer Torah, are all of these actions not for the purpose of Ochel Nefesh Mutter on Yom Tov, or should they be Aser? Beis Shammai says it's Aser, Beis Hillel says it's Mutter. The first glance, if you would ask me, I'd say Beis Shammai is right. How can it be Mutter? Hotzah is one of the Lamates Malachos. You're not doing Hotzah for Ochel Nefesh, you're doing Hotzah, you're taking out the baby carriage to roll the baby carriage, that's also Hotzah. You're not carrying anything, but that's like carrying. To roll the baby carriage in Rosh Hasarabim, that should be Hotzah, just like it's Asur on Shabbos, it should be Asur on Yom Tov if there's no Erev in the community. Beis Hillel is Mechadesh, a new idea. Beis Hillel says the reason why it's Mutter is because there's another principle that you have to learn, and that is the principle called Mitoch. Mitoch just means since. Beis Hillel says Mitoch Shehutra Litzorech Hutra Nami Shalolatzorech. Once the malacha is permitted for the purpose of Ochel Nefesh, then it's permitted even for non-Ochel Nefesh. If you need it on Yom Tov, then it's permitted to do that malacha, even if it's not for Ochel Nefesh per se. Mitoch Shehutra Litzorech, if Litzorech Ochel Nefesh, one is allowed to do a particular malacha, so then if you're not doing it for Ochel Nefesh, it's still going to be Mutter on Yom Tov. Quite a chiddush that Beis Hillel has. There's a lot of discussion in the Rishonim, where did they get this from? The simple svara that Beis Hillel have is that they assume that those malachos which are mutter because of Ochel Nefesh, there's a blanket heter that the Torah permits us to do these malachos for any purpose, not just for Ochel Nefesh, but once you can link Ochel Nefesh to these malachos, so then there's a heter that's more expansive. Even for non-Ochel Nefesh purposes, one is allowed to do that on Yom Tov. There is one exception, though. There's one limitation to this principle. Mitoch sounds like a tremendously expansive principle. It's not as expansive as you think. The one limitation that the Rishonim have, that most Rishonim have, is that it has to be a tzorech hayom kitzas. There has to be some purpose for Yom Tov. To idly be doing malachos for no purpose on Yom Tov, that certainly is going to be us. Even Beis Hillel would say that that's us. Beis Hillel are simply telling us that the heter of Ochel Nefesh expands to other tzorech hayom. Anything that's viewed as a tzorech hayom k'tas, a little purpose for the day, look, to take out the child, to carry the child in the public domain in order to enjoy Yom Tov, for Simchas Yom Tov, that's a purpose of Yom Tov. To take the Sefer Torah out because they have to read from the Torah, take a lulav to make a mitzvah, these are all purposes These are all for the purpose of Yom Tov. It's not Ochel Nefesh. One's not going to eat the lulav. You're not going to eat the child of the Sefer Torah. But it is a Tzorech Hayom Ktzas. If it's a Tzorech Hayom Ktzas, it's for some kind of purpose in the day, then they still claim that it's my people. This is how the Shulchan Aruch paskins. First of all, we paskin like Beis Hillel against Beis Shammai. We normally paskin that way. But the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah in Tov Kuf Yud Ches Sif Aleph both write that it has to be a Tzorech Hayom Ktzas. At least a Tzorech Hayom Ktzas. So then, even if it's not for the purpose of Ochel Nefesh, we'll still be makdim. So, take for instance, a person is walking in the street. He happens to have pieces of paper in his pocket. So, if the paper is for the shir, he took home the Mar Makomos for the shir on Yom Tov night, and the Rav is going to give a shir on that day, he's taking the Mar Makomos to shul. That's a Tzorech Hayom Ktzas. That would be mutter, even though there's no Ochel Nefesh involved, but that would be mutter. But let's say a person has blank pieces of paper in his pocket, or he has pieces of paper that have nothing to do with what he's doing on Yom Tov. It was from his chemistry class that it happens to be in his pants pocket. He was wearing a suit that day. He had some kind of interview or whatever, and he's wearing the same suit on Yom Tov. Then he would not be allowed to carry that. If there's no Erev in his community, he would not be allowed to take those pieces of paper out because there's no Tzorech Hayom Ktzas in carrying those pieces of paper. Others talk about another very common Shiloh that comes up on Yom Tov. We know a person who lives without an Erev, so one of the big heterim that exists on Yom Tov is to carry your keys. On Shabbos, you got a whole problem. Where to keep the keys? Keep it inside the building, outside the building, you put it under the rug. It's all complicated. On Yom Tov, it's much easier. You can take your house key with you. It's a Tzorech Hayom. So if it's mutter to take the house keys. But let's say you're carrying on your keychain, you're carrying your car keys as well. Moshe Feinstein has a whole tshuva where he says that that should be us. You have to take off the car keys. If you don't take off the car keys, then that's a Hotzah Shalol Tzorech Hayom. And if you're carrying Shalol Tzorech Hayom, what's the heter? We told Shalol Shalol Tzorech Hoshanami Shalol Tzorech. It's mutter to carry your house keys because you need them for Yom Tov. You don't need your car keys on Yom Tov. So what's the heter? The answer is there is no heter. So the only way it's going to be mutter to carry your house key is if you take off the car key from the ring. So if you forget to take off the car key, you should somehow take it off. It's a problem. It's muktzah. So how exactly do you get it off? But you should probably take it off in some way. Try to get it off in some way. What's the best way to do this? Maybe try to take off your house key from the ring. Leave the car key on the ring. Take off the house key and carry the house key. Then you won't have a problem. Then you won't have to touch the car keys and move the car keys from the ring. Leave the car keys on the ring. Just take off your house key and then you'll be able to walk outside. Okay. So it's mutter, based on Beis Hillel, to do Hotzah, to do other malachos, even not for the purpose of Ochel Nefesh, as long as it's Tzorech Hayom. So imagine the following scenario. Let's say a person takes a lulav in a place without an Erev, takes a lulav to shul, and now he wants to take the lulav home. So taking the lulav home, unless he has a wife at home or children who haven't been yotzei in the midst of lulav, so he's taking it home for them, it's not really a Tzorech Hayom for the rest of the day. He wants the lulav so that he'll be able to take it for tomorrow, but it's not a Tzorech Hayom for today. He already was yotzei in the midst of the Tilas lulav. So it's mutter for him to take the lulav home. Let's say a person on Rosh Hashanah is going to Tashlich. And the place where he has a river, the minhag is to say Tashlich by river, let's say the river is outside the Erev. So is it mutter for him to carry the machzer? Of course, because he's going to say Tashlich. It's a Tzorech Hayom. There is a purpose for the day, for this action during the day. So it's mutter for him to take the machzer in order to use the machzer on that day. But is it mutter for him to take the machzer home? First answer, you'd say not. It's not a Tzorech Hayom Ktzas. We just said, even though it's mutter to do Hotzah, not for the purpose of Ochel Nefesh, but it has to be a Tzorech Hayom Ktzas. So what's a person to do? Leave the lulav in shul? If you get ruined, if you get stolen, if you get dried up, we certainly want to take it home. What's the hechter to take it home? What's the hechter to take the machzer home? So the Mishnah Berurah in Tov Kuf Yud Ches, that same simon, which talks about mitoch, it's Sifkat and Vav, the Mishnah Berurah invokes a very important principle. The Mishnah Beitz, in a different context, has a famous principle called Hitiru Sofon Mishum Trilasa. That sometimes Chazal permitted us to do certain things. Hitiru Sofon Mishum Trilasa. In order to get a person to do something, Chazal will matter him to do other things in the end, in order that the Trila, that in the beginning, he'll be willing to do this action. What's the case? What's the Mishnah talking about? So there are three cases the Mishnah has. I'll just give you one of them. One of the cases the Mishnah says is that Chazal wanted people to shech behemoth on yada because they wanted people to have simchas yada, to eat fresh meat. The problem is, if a person shechs a behemoth, so in those times they were very careful to use every part of the behemoth. The animal was very expensive. So they would shech the animal, they would eat the flesh, and they would use the skins of the animal as well. The problem is that if you don't tan the skins, if you don't harden the skins immediately or quickly, soon after the shechita, they get ruined, and then you can't use them. You can't use them for their hide. You can't use them to make leather things. So it's very important to do something to the skin. You skin the animal, and you put the skin into some chemical, or you have to do some other kind of procedure to tan, to process the skin in some way, that it'll be preserved appropriately, and you'll be able to make leather out of it. You'll be able to use it for your purposes. Problem is, on Yom Tov, one is not allowed to be ma'abed the or. You can't, ma'abed is with an ayin. You can't do eat, but you can't tan the leather. That's one of the lamekas malachos. So if you can't tan the leather, what are you supposed to do? If you shech the animal and then you skin the animal to separate the flesh, so then the hide is going to get ruined. And if the hide gets ruined, people are not going to want to shech the animal to begin with. And they're going to be nimna, they're going to hold themselves back from simchas Yom Tov. So Chazal were concerned people are not going to want to shech, because if we don't allow them to do something to this or to do something to the skin, they'll take a big loss. So they won't want to shech the animal to begin with. So Chazal permitted you to put the skins in a public area, so people are going to walk in that public area and they'll step on the skin. It's not the best way to tan the skin. The best way is to put it in a chemical. But at least it'll keep the leather soft throughout Yom Tov, and then you'll be able to do with it what you want. This kind of iba, this kind of stepping on the skin to process it, to help it in its softening, that's an isa d'rabbanan. It's not a real ibud. It's a malacha d'rabbanan. So Chazal were lenient in that malacha d'rabbanan of ibud in order to get you to do shechita. Hitiru sofa misham chilasam. Mishnah Berurah says, for the same reason, one is allowed to bring the lulav back to the home. One is allowed to bring their machzor back home, even if they don't use it on the Yom Tov. They're allowed to bring it back home to give an incentive that the person will want to bring it in the first place. Chazal would be mekel to bring it back. Of course, that the limitation is that probably would only apply if we're talking about carrying in an area that's a rishis harabim d'rabbanan. That's what we call a karmelis. Without getting involved in the complications, there are certain areas that Min HaTorah one is not allowed to carry in, and certain areas that Chazal added, they said it's not as stringent, but Chazal said we still don't want you to carry in that area. So in those areas, it's a public area, it's not a Rishus HaYach, it is a public area, it's not a Rishus HaRab D'Araisa, it's not the most public area, it's not a main plaza, perhaps there aren't 600,000 people who go there, different requirements. It's a more lenient public domain, but Chazal said we don't want you to carry there either. So from such an area, one could probably bring back the item, because Heim Amru, Veheim Amru, the same Rabbanan who said that it's also to carry in this particular area, they would say that it's mutter to bring it back. Hitiru sofa misham chilasan. That if you're talking about a malacha daraisa, Rishus HaRabim daraisa, Chazal perhaps would not be megal, because how could they be megal? They'll tell you to violate this issur daraisa in order to get you to bring the lulav in the first place. Who says that they have the right to do that? But at least to violate the issur d'rabbanan of carrying in a karmelis, Chazal would have the right to tell you to do that. This, by the way, is a very important issue. This plays out in a different context. Many of you might know that Hatzalah members who are called on Shabbos, so they can take an ambulance to the hospital. But the question is, how do they get home? What's the heter to get home? So we know some, there are different minhagim and different hatzolas. Some hatzolas, actually, the hatzolah members, the Jewish members, drive home. And in other hatzolas, they get a guy to drive for them. So that's this question. The whole heter to come back at all, even to get a guy to drive for you, a non-Jew doing malacha for you, is an issur d'rabbanan, when it's not allowed to derive benefit from the malacha of a Jew on Shabbos. So, getting the goy to drive you home is an issur d'rabbanan. You driving home is an issur d'araisa. The question is, how far do we extend this idea that he threw a sofa mishum chilasa? Many postum hold that it only relates to malachos d'rabbanan. So that's why some want to suggest that you have to be machmir, get a goy to drive. That's why there are some hatzalah organizations that have a non-Jew driving to the hospital as well. I mean, if the non-Jew is going to drive home, someone has to drive there. So the same non-Jew is going to drive home. They get him to drive there. He's on call for Shabbos. Whenever the call comes out for the Hatzalah members, he gets the call too. He runs to get what they call the bus, right? To get the ambulance. And he picks up whoever he has to pick up, and they go to the kol, and then he drives them home from the hospital. Other hatzalos, I make even more than that. That maybe even malachos daraisa are going to be mutter. That's not for now, but it's all based on this idea. He tiru sofa mishum chilasan. But chazal amekel, even sofan, there's no heter of pikuach nefesh. There's no one who's sick once you delivered him to the hospital. But he tiru sofa mishum chilasan. Chazal said that it's mutter. They're more lenient to do malacha even after the heter really should be over, in order to give the incentive to the individual to do the malach in the first place for the heter that Chazal want them to do the malach. Are there any other limitations to the heter of Ochel Nefesh? So there are two very important limitations. And they're all based on the Pasuk of Parashat Kol that we mentioned earlier. What's the Pasuk again? Ach asher ye'ochel Ochel Nefesh. Ach asher ye'ochel Ochel Nefesh. So the pasuk uses the word lochem. Ochel nefesh is the only thing that you're allowed to do, lochem, but anything else you're not allowed to do. So the Gemara Beitza on the Chaf Aleph is medayik, or has a drasha from the word lochem, that dafka for you, dafka for Jews, you're allowed to do ochel nefesh. Lochem velo le'akum. For you it's mutter, but for goyim it's aser. When it's not allowed to do malach on yom, for the purpose of non-Jews. And this is how we paskin. Moreover, the Gemara in Beit Sand Av Chaf Aleph says that one is not allowed to invite a nachri to his seuda on yom tov. Why? Gzeira shemayarbe bishvila. Because we're afraid that you might add on to cook more for the non-Jew. We know Lochem V'lo La'akum tells me that I'm not allowed to cook for the non-Jew, so I'm not even allowed to invite him for the meal, because if I invite him for the meal, I might add a little bit to him. If he's a chosh of a guest, he's an important person, so I might add something on Yom Tov for him, and I'm not allowed to do that. That would be a Malacha D'Araisa. And the post can point out, even if everything is prepared, I'm still not allowed to invite him. There might be something else to do. You might make a tea for him. You might do something for the guy, and one is not allowed to prepare, one is not allowed to do malacha on Yom Tov for the purpose of the non-Jew. This is how the Shulchan Aruch paskins. This is in Tav Kuf Yud Bei Sif Aleph. This is very important. People do not know this. Many people will invite for Yom Tov, they'll invite different political leaders, non-Jewish political leaders to their home, or they'll invite a non-Jew who's learning to become a ger. He's not Jewish, he's still a non-Jew. That's a serious problem. On Yom Tov, one is allowed to cook for the purpose of Ochel Nefesh, but one is not allowed to cook for the purpose of the guy. Not only can't you cook for the purpose of the non-Jew, for his Ochel Nefesh, you can't even invite him because of the gzeira that you might add for the non-Jew. The gzeira, the rabbana, that you might cook for the non-Jew. So you got to be very careful about this. Yes?
So just like out of, like, from a practice speaking, how do you ever see a gzeira?
It's a problem. It's a serious, serious problem. Maybe the ger should not see a seder. Does he have to see the seder in order to become a ger? Maybe we could teach him a lot about the seder without seeing his first seder. But to invite him, he's going to eat at your meal, it's very problematic. There's a whole discussion in the poskim if you can invite non-observant Jews. What's the status of a non-observant Jew? So some poskim claim that non-observant Jews have the status of Gentiles. In certain halachas, they have a status of a non-Jew. Most poskim are megal. Most poskim assume b'zman hazeh any non-observant Jew is non-observant because he just doesn't know better. When we talk about that, the concept of a mumer means someone who changed religions, who became, so to speak, like a non-Jew. So a mumer might have the status of a non-Jew. That's only the old-time mumer. A person who was Jewish and knows exactly what the halacha requires of him, and nevertheless he decides to leave it all. But if a person is non-observant because of lack of knowledge, so many poskim hold that his status is not that of a non-Jew, and therefore one would be allowed to invite him on Yom Tov. That's probably a mitzvah, to invite the person on Yom Tov, to try to bring him closer. But to invite someone who's studying to become a ger, I would say not to invite him on Yom Tov. You can invite him on Shabbos. Shabbos is better than Yom Tov. Shabbos is holier than Yom Tov. There's no need for him to see a seder. You can talk about it. The one important exception to this rule is a person's evet, a person's servant. I'm not talking about an evet k'naini that a person owns. I'm talking about a servant, a living maid. A living maid, it does not fall under the rubric of this issa. If it would, we'd be in big trouble. But you can't feed the living maid. You would have to send the living maid home on Yom Tov. No, the living maid you don't have to send home on Yom Tov. The Mishnah Berurah explains that this iser, that one is not allowed to invite a non-Jew, it only applies to an important person. Because an important person, you might add a little bit for him. But a living maid, you're not going to add something special for the living maid. The living maid eats whatever is available. You're not going to do something special for the living maid. So the gzeirah shemiyavim bishvila would not apply to the living maid. So that's the one heter, which is very important. This issue comes up left and right. When does it come up? Hotels. Person owns a hotel, they have the hotel open for Pesach or for Sukkot or for some Shavuos. And the hotel is not only a Jewish hotel, that there are Jewish guests, there are non-Jewish guests in the hotel as well. It could happen. There's a Jewish caterer. They're cooking, they have a Jewish caterer cooking in the kitchen, but they have non-Jewish guests as well. So the question is, what's the heter? They're cooking for non-Jews. How can there be a heter? The poskim spend a lot of time discussing what the heter is for that circumstance. And the one heter they come up with is, if you have a non-Jew cooking in the kitchen, perhaps there is a heter. Since this is only a gzeira d'rabbanan shemayarva b'shvilo, if there's a non-Jew who's doing the cooking, so that's what we would call a shvus d'shvus, it's a double d'rabbanan. A shvus means it's an issa d'rabbanan. Having a non-Jew do the cooking is only an issa d'rabbanan to begin with. Since the gzeira shemayarva b'shvilo is only an issa d'rabbanan as well, so that's a shvus d'shvus. So shvus to shvus, perhaps there's room b'makom darke shalom, in order not to make enmity, in order not to create animosity between the Jews and the non-Jews, to say our hotel is closed to non-Jews. It's going to create animosity. So in order to increase darke shalom, maybe Chazal would be lenient by this double d'rabbanan, to have a non-Jew cook in the kitchen, since the whole iser is only gzeirah shemayarva b'shvilo, it's only an iser d'rabbanan to begin with, it's a double d'rabbanan. So maybe for the purpose of darkei shalom, it might be mutter. But it's something to keep in mind. This is something that people don't know of, and it's an important halacha to keep in mind. The other important limitation, based on the pasuk in Parshas Bo, is that the only kind of ochel nefesh that it's mutter to do malacha for is something that we call shove l'chol nefesh. That should be a davar hashove l'chol nefesh. The pasuk says, "Ach asher ye'ochel l'chol nefesh." So then it has to be shove l'chol nefesh. That's the other limitation. The only heter v'ochel nefesh on Yom Tov is a davar hashav l'chol nefesh. What does that mean, shove l'chol nefesh? That everyone needs it, everyone uses it, most people need it. So this idea comes to the fore in the Mishnah in Beitzah. The Mishnah Daf Chav Beis in Beitzah says that one is not allowed to do what they call mugmar. There's a lot of concepts floating around in the Mishnah. Mugmar, what does mugmar mean? They used to have a custom at the end of the meal that they would light incense. They'd light some kind of spices. It was nice. You know, you'd sit there and you were digesting the meal and you'd have a nice spice. It would help you digest. It would help the food go down and you were happier as a result. So that's what they used to do. So the Mishnah says that according to the Chachamim, whom we paskin like, one is not allowed to do this mugmar on Yom Tov. Why not? You would say it's a tzorach hayom. It might not be ochel nefesh, but what are you doing? You're lighting a fire. Havara, lighting the fire, or adding to a fire. We'll talk about exactly how one is allowed to light a fire. But certainly to take a fire, to take from a pre-existing fire and to light another twig, one is allowed to do that on Yom Tov, so why shouldn't you be able to light the mugmar? What's the difference? So the Gemara explains, Gemara Ksubas actually explains that Mishnah, that mugmar is not shavu l'chol nefesh, not everyone needs the mugmar. So if not everyone needs the mugmar, then it's not included within the heter v'chol nefesh. It's not shavu l'chol nefesh. If it's not shavu l'chol nefesh, it's also to do. So what does shavu l'chol nefesh mean? So presumably you say it means that a majority of people enjoy doing this particular act. Some posts can point out it's not only related to the majority of people. It's also related to what kind of act is this. Is this a necessity? Is this for someone's health, like eating? Or is this a luxury? It's a tainug. It's not absolutely necessary. It's just a luxury. Something which is a luxury, the posts can say, even if most people do it, it doesn't matter. It's viewed as a luxury. If it's not for health, it's viewed as a luxury and it would be asur on Yom Tov. What's an example of this? There's a famous comment that the Pnei Yoshua and Shabbos made. He writes that it's mutter to smoke on Yom Tov, to smoke cigarettes on Yom Tov. He says because that's healthy. It's healthy. It's healthy to smoke. They used to think that smoking helps digestion. It helps digest the food. So the Pnei Yeshua writes, and smoking is healthy, so therefore it's mutter to do it on Yantav because it's Shavu L'chol Nefesh. Ad kan davar. So applying the principle of Davar Shavu L'chol Nefesh to the 21st century, since we know that smoking is Aser, not only might smoking be Aser during the week, which it probably is, because it's not healthy, but on Yantav it's certainly Aser. Even someone who somehow will figure out a heter for during the week, but on Yantav it's certainly Aser. Even if most people smoked, which they don't, most people don't smoke nowadays, but even if most people smoked, it would still be aser. Because since it's not for health reasons, by definition, it's a luxury, it's a tiny, it's an enjoyment. It's not absolutely necessary, so if it's not absolutely necessary, it can't be defined as Shavu L'chol Nefesh anyway. So smoking would be prohibited on Yom Tov no matter what.
Even for changeholders?
Yes. Yes, they'd have to control themselves. They control themselves on Shabbos, so they'll have to control themselves on Yom Tov as well. Sorry? Because people assume that there was an old heter. They don't realize the old heter was based on the fact that people thought it was healthy, but now that we know that it's not healthy, the heter really evaporates with a puff of smoke. It's not really... I think Rove Poskim was something like that. It's, the heter is very shaky. You know, even when I was growing up, 30 years ago, there were many more people who smoked. You don't see it as commonly. Many, many more people used to smoke on Yom Tov. Many fewer people smoke nowadays, bichlal. But even those who smoke, fewer smoke on Yom Tov. People are more a heter because it's hard for them. But the reality is, the heter is very questionable. It's not Shavu L'chol Nefesh, by any stretch of the imagination. Neither in terms of the numbers, nor in terms of it being for health purposes. It's really a luxury. People say, no, it's a necessity. I need it. You need it because of the addiction that you have. I don't know if that defines it as a necessity. Yeah, there are some poskim who say that, but they're few and far between. Most poskim assume it should be awesome. Yes?
Well, what about, we said that, I forgot the name, but like you can like carry your keys or carry anything, because that's, because it's like, it's a blank ahead there. So like, I mean, most people don't have the need to carry keys or have, I mean, I know I don't have kids.
Anyone who, whether you have children or not, you have to carry the keys. If you live alone in your apartment, how else are you going to get into your apartment on Yom Tov?
Well, okay, well, what about like Gemara notes? Like, I mean, I don't see how that's a universal need.
It's a type of action. Gemara notes means whatever carrying, whatever notes or whatever piece of paper that you need on Yom Tov, a siddur is also paper. It happens to be bound very nicely, but it's also paper. Whatever you need on Yom Tov, it's normal for you to carry that. So you'll carry a siddur, he'll carry a masa, the other one will carry notes. Everyone is carrying their own things, but Hotsoa in general is a Tzorach Hayom. So that's a normal act. Smoking is a... You'll say, what, Havara? That's what we're talking about? I don't think we would say that any Havara... That smoking is just a type of Havara. Havara is Shavu L'chol Nefesh. I don't think we would say that. I think in the case of the notes, if someone were in your situation and he wanted to go to the shir, he'd also carry the notes. If you were in the other person's situation and you needed a machzor and you had a hard time reading, you'd also carry the machzor. It's just that your situation is just a little bit different. But people, only people who need the smoking, smoke. And most people are not smoking. That's why it's not called Shavu L'chol Nefesh. The other important example of an act that might not be Shavu L'chol Nefesh is the issue of bathing on Yom Tov, taking showers on Yom Tov. This is very important. The Mishnah in Beitza on Daf Chavale quotes Beis Hillel, who hold that one is allowed to warm up water, meaning one is allowed to do havara, to boil up, to do havara and bishul, to boil the water in order to wash his hands, his face, his panav, yadav, raglav. He's allowed to wash different parts of his body. But the Rishonim and Madayik, they deduce from the Mishnah, that you see from the Mishnah, that you can only warm up water in order to wash parts of your body. Well, why is it good to do that? Oh, it's a tzorach hayom tas. You want to wash parts of your face, your hands, your feet. It's a tzorach hayom. Why should you not be allowed to do that? But it sounds in the Mishnah that you can't warm up water in order to wash your entire body. What's the difference? Why shouldn't you be able to wash your, to warm up water to wash your entire body? So Tosfos and Beitza right there says that Beis Hillel holds that dafka only to warm up water for the purpose of washing parts of your body is mutter, because washing your entire body is not Shavu L'chol Nefesh. Most people don't do that on a regular basis. They take a shower every day? They wash their body every day? No, says Tosfos. So since most people don't take a shower every day, it's not Shavu L'chol Nefesh. It's not a uniform need for every individual. So therefore, it's not mutter on Yom Tov. That's why the Mishnah only said that Beis Hillel holds you're allowed to warm up water to wash parts of your body, but not your whole body. So someone has suggested, based on this Tosfos, that nowadays, since it's very common for people to take a shower every day, Maybe there should be no issa to take a shower. So was it as a result of taking out the water from the faucet or from the shower head, new water is going to come into the boiler and it's going to warm up the water. The fact is that this is shavu l'chol nefesh, so one should be allowed to warm up the water because it's shavu l'chol nefesh to do so. If you'd only take Tosa's opinion seriously, that might be correct. But the problem is, there are those who disagree with Tosa's. The Rambam has a chumri. The Rambam says, you know why Beis Hillel felt that it's usur when it's prohibited from warming up water for the purpose of washing his entire body? Not because it's eino shav l'chol nefesh, but rather because it's what he calls the gzeras merchatz. It was a gzera that Chazal instituted in bath houses. Gzeras merchatz. Let's get this idea. Gzeras. Chazal were afraid that there were bathhouse attendants that because they wanted people to come to the bathhouse on Shabbos, that they would warm up the water on Shabbos. They should have warmed up the water from before Shabbos, but it's hard to keep it hot overnight. So they would warm up the water on Shabbos. Chmona litzlan. So they'd be doing malacha. It is a malacha derabbanan, because it's the goy doing the malacha, but it's still aser. It's aser on Shabbos, and the Jews would come to the bathhouse. And they would sit in the bathhouse on Shabbos. There should be no issa d'oraisa to go to the bathhouse, to go into the water on Shabbos. But the problem is that you're not allowed to warm up the water. That's the problem. You can't get to first base. So the bathhouse attendants, the Chachamim, saw that they were warming up the water on Shabbos, so they made a gzera that you're not allowed to go to the bathhouse on Shabbos. Then they extended this gzera to Yom Tov, even though on Yom Tov it really should be mutter to warm up the water. It's at Tzorach Hayom. But a gzeir of Yom Tov Otu Shabbos, if you were mati you to go to the bathhouse on Yom Tov, you might come to go to the bathhouse on Shabbos. We don't want to do that because we don't want the bathhouse attendants to be warming up the water on Shabbos. So they said even on Yom Tov you can't do it. So the Rambam says, based on this gzeir, one would not be allowed to warm up water on Yom Tov for the purpose of washing his entire body, even if it would be defined as Shabbat Chol Nefesh. There's a gzeir smerchatz. One is not allowed to bathe in warm water, both on Shabbos and Yom Tov, because we're afraid that the balonim, that the bathhouse attendants, are going to warm up the water. The nafkamina being, on a 3-day Yom Tov, can you take a shower? Let's say it's hot. Most people don't have to take a shower every day. People like to, but they can survive if they don't take a shower every day. But on a 3-day Yom Tov, it becomes very difficult. On a Simchas Torah, it becomes even more difficult. You're dancing, getting all sweated up. It's not so easy. What makes matters even worse is that the post can point out that this gzeras merchatz applies not only to warm water but even to cold water. Because Chazal were afraid that if we allow you to bathe your entire body in cold water, you'll come to bathe your entire body in hot water. And if we allow you to bathe on Yom Tov, you'll bathe on Shabbos. They put all these gzeras together. Sometimes we say, how can you have a gzera le gzera? You have one gzera for another gzera. One gzera to protect another gzera. But kula chada gzeri, apparently all these gzeras were enacted at the same time. Chazal were concerned, so they said, we don't want you to bathe, not in hot water, not in cold water, not in Yom Tov, not in Shabbos, at all, period. So that's a big chum. We're not going to allow people to bathe, not because it's not shavu l'chol nefesh, but because it's this gzeras merchatz, so what's a person to do? Shaila has been raised by many people, especially in recent years. In Europe, it wasn't such a big deal because people did not bathe very frequently. They bathed once a month or once a week or once every 2 weeks. They used to put on perfumes and other things to take away the smell. So, but we live in a more hygienic, conscious society, and we do bathe frequently. So what are we supposed to do? So some of the poskim suggest, I think Reb Moshe Feinstein writes this in one place, that maybe the gzeras merchatz only applies to a merchatz, to a bathhouse. But maybe it doesn't apply to a shower. Maybe Chazal never instituted the gzeras merchatz. That is what it is, a gzeras merchatz. Maybe they didn't institute this gzera to a shower. Moreover, how do you define cold water? You know, the gzera applies even to cold water, but what does cold mean? Freezing cold? Reb Moshe says, no, that's not what cold water means. If you just add hot water in order to take out the chill from the cold water, that's still cold. That's not even included within that would be defined as cold water. Right? To define something as cold water, you don't have to take a shower in freezing cold water. Reb Moshe says that if you take a shower in water that's not lukewarm, You took the chill out of the water, but it's still a little bit cool. It's not certainly not the water that you would normally take a shower in, but it's not lukewarm. It's a little bit less than that. So that would be called cold water. So you put two and two together. What might emerge is that, look, first of all, in a shower, it could be there's no gzera whatsoever. Even if you want to say that the gzera of merchatz applies even to a shower, right? But this extra minig to be machmir even for cold water, which perhaps was not part of the original gzera, Rav Moshe assumes that was not part of the original gzera. I think the lashon of the Magen Avraham is that way. That this is an extra minig. The real gzera was to prohibit rechitza in merchatz, washing in merchatz on Shabbos and on Yom Tov. That's rechitza b'chamin. Then there's an extra minig that was added on to that, that later Chachamim added on, that even in sonin, even in cold water, one should not wash themselves, their entire body. Your hands, yeah, your face, yeah, but not the entire body. So even if you'll assume that the Xeris Merchatz applies to a shower, which in itself is questionable, but one could suggest that this extra minig, the Makom Tsar, they didn't institute this minig, this custom to be machmer even for washing with cold water, would not apply. And how do you define cold? Cold means any water that's less than lukewarm. Any water that you only added hot water to take out the chill, that's called cold water. So if you put two and two together, what should emerge is that on a long three-day Yom Tov, especially on Simchas Torah, there might be room to be megil. B'makom tzar. The person is not b'tzar. Why should he shower? But b'makom tzar, maybe he could be megil to wash in cold water, wash his body in cold water. What does that mean? It doesn't mean freezing cold water. It means one can wash in the shower with water that's not so warm, it's not lukewarm, certainly not hot, but not lukewarm. You just added enough hot water to take out the chill. That's still livable. You could take a shower like that. Normally, if you're sweated up, you'll probably enjoy that. If it's hot enough in your house, hot enough outside, so you feel sweated, you'll probably enjoy that kind of a shower. You might even enjoy a colder shower than that. But you'll certainly enjoy that kind of a shower, and it'll be enough to get yourself clean. So this is what some of the poskim are making for. I don't know. But he does say that maybe in a shower they never made such a gzera. That the gzera was specifically made by a merchatz, maybe because the whole gzera was due to the bathhouse attendants. You don't have a bathhouse attendant in the shower. The shower is a private area.
So the tam is included in them because it was
terrible. That's the question, right? How much is the tam included? How much is it not included? It's always a question, how much can the tam be included in the gzera? That's a question that's beyond the shir, but it's a very important issue that has to be addressed. Rav Moshe apparently assumed not that way.
So what's the bottom line?
So the bottom line is, it's on tape. The bottom line is that there are many poskim who are mekel if a person really feels uncomfortable, and it's happened. I have poskim for members of my family. There was a Simchas Torah a couple of years ago. It was mamish like 85 degrees outside, and the air conditioning in the shul was not good. Really not good. So people were dancing, but they were like dripping like faucets. It was ridiculous. So at that point, so people went over to the rabbi of that shul and said, what do we do? So he was talking about it to different people and giving them guidelines as to what do. It's a little complicated. When you shower, it's a little complicated. You got to be careful, first of all, that you only pat down your hair, any hairy area of the body. You're not allowed to rub that area of the body because that might be schita, that might be called squeezing. And we pass him in the Rabbanan that one is not allowed to squeeze even hair. Classical squeezing is like squeezing out a towel, squeezing out a sponge. In the Rabbanan we assume that one is not allowed to squeeze out hair either, so it becomes very tricky. I guess you can just hold the towel without patting the hair too much. You can hold it just to get the surface water off. But between you and me, the surface water is not going to do too much. It's probably better not to dry off the hair. So it's a little tricky. If it's hot enough outside, what you should do is take the shower, then walk outside, and it'll dry the hair. That's one important thing to keep in mind. The other important thing to keep in mind is, how do you shower? What soap? You can't use the regular solid soap because that's smoothing out the bar. That's a malacha deraisa. So what you would have to do is take shampoo or take some other kind of soap, water it down, and then use it as a liquid soap. So it's tricky how to shower. But if a person is really uncomfortable, then I think it is mutter. It's mutter to turn on. Some people are makpid. They try not to shower with their whole body. They shower parts of their body. That's a bigger chumr, because then they're not really doing their entire body one time. So maybe that's not included within the gzera to begin with. I don't know if you have to be so machmer. As long as you shower in water that's not lukewarm, meaning it's exactly as I described, but you added enough hot water to take out the chill, I think b'makom tzar, there is room to be mekel. Yes?
What if somebody, like, puts shampoo in their hair without having water in it previously, so it's not really squeezing the water and shampoo out now.
Well, there's no problem with shampooing the hair because you're not squeezing out the shampoo. When you run in the shampoo in your hair, you want the shampoo to be there.
Right, right.
So that's not sthita. That would not be called squeezing. The problem is if you want the water out of the hair, after you finish with the showers, you're drying yourself off. You can't dry yourself off in the normal way, and that could be uncomfortable. A person has hair, you know, the hair doesn't have to be long, even if you have a short hairdo, you know, if you have a beard or something. Yeah, you know, it drips all over the place. You feel a little cold outside. It's not so comfortable, but you got to be careful because if you're not careful, you can violate other issues. You know, you're jumping from the cold water into the hot water. You're jumping from the frying pan into the fire. You're solving the rechitza in the merchatz issue, but now you have a schita b'seir issue. So, you know, you haven't solved everything. You got to be careful. You have to be careful. Okay.
Mikvah.
So that's another part of this issue. Because going into the mikveh, at first glance you would say, should be a violation of Zeres Merchatz. Right, so, L'tzorech mitzvah, the chasidim amekel. Yeah. I guess you have to assume that the Zerah never applied to mikveh. Just as we can suggest that it never applied to showering, maybe it never applied to a mikveh. The mikveh is a specially designated pool. It's a specially designated pool of water. Maybe this Zerah didn't apply to that. That's what you have to say. If not, there's no basis to go to the mikvah. People go to the mikvah on Shabbos also. They go to the warm mikvah. Some are makbid on Shabbos and Yom Tov that the mikvah should not be as warm. For this reason.
Cold and hot
mikvahs, right? So that's all based on this issue. Is there a teres merchatz? Are we machmir b'makom mitzvah that it should be cold? That's the question. Okay. We were talking about the heter v'chol nefesh. Yes.
Two questions. First off, is anyone possible to tell us just
I'm sure some poskim on Mitzare, if they combine Tosfos as another reason to be Mekel. But I think the Rambam, since the Shulchan Aruch and the poskim, the Magen Avraham on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, is very machmer in this Gezerah of Merchatz, I think most poskim assume that we should try to be machmer for that Rambam. So they'll use Tosfos to say this is not the worst thing in the world, because according to Tosfos, it doesn't really apply nowadays. But Tosfos is not sufficient. That's why they assume that you have to use colder water. Because they assumed that the gzeira of the merchatz would still apply. We discussed the idea of the heter ochel nefesh in terms of cooking. How about kibui, extinguishing a flame? Are you allowed to extinguish a flame on Yom Tov? So at first glance you'd say, what's the ochel nefesh in extinguishing the flame? Lighting the fire, that's for the purpose of ochel nefesh, but is kibui is extinguishing the flame for ochel nefesh? The answer is it could be in certain circumstances. Let's say you want to extinguish the flame, or lower the flame, because you're afraid that the food is going to get ruined. So the Gemara in Beitza, Daf Chav Gimel, talks about the case of Bisra Agumri. Let's say a person wants to cook meat. So what do you do with the meat? How do you cook meat? At the time of the Gemara, you would put it on the coals. So Bisra Agumri is like what we had before, Mugmar. Mugmar means burning up the wood. Here it's not sweet smelling wood. It's not incense. You're just burning the Basar, burning the flesh on the fire. So the Gemara says, Bisra Agumri is mutter. How can it be mutter? But when you cook the... meaning you're allowed to put it directly on the coals, directly on the wood, not just hang it on top. You can put it on the wood. But you're going to be mechabe, the juices of the flesh, and frankly, even if you hang it, the juices are going to come down as well. I guess you could put some kind of a container to take the juices away, but you're allowed to put it on the wood itself. How could it be? It's going to be mechabe. It's going to extinguish the flame just a little bit. It's not going to extinguish it completely. It's, you know, it'll sizzle, right? It gets extinguished a little bit, and then it'll burn up more. But it extinguishes it a little bit. So the Gemara explains, no, it's for the purpose of ochel nefesh. That's the only way to cook your meat appropriately. Or even if it's not the only way, but it's a good way. Roasting the meat. So that's mutter because it's for ochel nefesh. It's in Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah, it's in the Tavkuf Yudali, quotes the Yeshomrim that says, even for other purposes, if you want to extinguish the fire because you're afraid that the food is going to get too smoky, there's too much smoke, so you want to extinguish the fire to reduce the smoke in some way. Well, let's say as the Mishnah Berurah says, you want to extinguish the fire because you're afraid that the tavshil is going to burn, the food's going to burn. That's the more common example that we have nowadays. So then it's mutter to extinguish the fire. So the poskim say, based on this, if you have a gas range, if you have a stove that's not electric, but rather it's a gas range, one is allowed to lower the fire on Yom Tov at the end of the cooking process. You raise the fire in order to cook, But then at the end, when you finish, you can lower the fire. Everyone has this question. Look, I raise the fire. I don't want to keep the fire on so high. The whole yom. First of all, it's a waste of fuel. It's a waste of money. But secondly, it's going to make the house hot. So what can I do? So a lot of the poskim say it's a trick, but it's not really a trick. A person is cooking. So at the end of the cooking, technically speaking, you could take the food off the fire and just leave it on the side and leave the fire there. But the reality is we want the food to be warm, so it's better for it to be on the fire. The best thing would be to lower the flame so that it'll stay warm, but it won't burn. So that's mutter. How's it mutter to lower the flame? Because it's for the purpose of ochel nefesh, it's for the purpose of preserving the food. But to turn off the fire, let's say it's the second day Yom Tov, and you're not going to be cooking anything else, you've served already. It's after lunch, you're not going to serve anymore. Just to turn off the fire, that the poskim say is us. Most can say just to turn off the fire to conserve fuel, that's going to be aser. Because that we assume is extinguishing. We assume turning off a gas range is extinguishing the fire. And extinguishing a fire, not for the purpose of ochel nefesh, is aser on Yom Tov. It's not a tzorech hayom, there's no purpose for that. There's too much heat in the kitchen, you know what they say. If it's too hot in the kitchen, stay out of the kitchen. If you can't stand the heat in the kitchen. That's not simchas Yom Tov. You don't have to be in the kitchen. There's no reason to be in the kitchen. You're not cooking anymore. So to lower the flame, if you're not cooking anymore and it's not for the purpose of ochel nefesh, that's highly questionable. Yes?
Are you allowed to make a barbecue or anything?
What do you mean?
A charcoal barbecue.
Explain to me how a barbecue works. Is the fire on from before Yom Tov, or are you going to turn the fire on Yom Tov itself?
You're
going to light from something else onto the barbecue on Yom Tov. So what should be the problem? What is going on there? You'll turn the barbecue on. There's no electric ignition in the barbecue.
No.
There's no electric ignition. So you're gonna turn the gas on, and then you'll light the fire from something else. So you have the flame, and then you're gonna light this gas from the other flame.
Same thing as a gas stove.
That should be the same as a gas stove. You're taking a pilot light and you're lighting for the pilot. I would imagine it should be okay.
In Staten Island, we're moving in the park.
Rebuvin has a barbecue? Really? Just for his own family, or he invites the whole community?
Something cool, something.
I don't live in such a fancy community. Wow. The Bachim get the leftovers. Very good. But what's interesting, my question to you simply indicates that my only reservation I was concerned about was the following. Electric stoves, they're much more problematic. Electric ignition stoves, if the stove is off, doesn't have a pilot light. Electric coil stoves, let's say the whole stove's electric, it's not run by gas. So that's a big problem. Why? Because the way an electric stove works, I don't know, I'm not an engineer, but the way it's been explained to me is that the electric stove works based on certain resistances. That it'll, if you raise the temperature, what it does is it extinguishes one coil and it lights another coil. So even if you're going to extinguish the fire, or if you're going to light the fire, what happens is a new coil is going to be lit. So that's like lighting a new fire. That's not simply drawing fire from a pre-existing fire, as we described, but rather it's lighting a new fire. And that touches on the whole issue as to what kind of havar, what kind of lighting a fire is actually mutter on Yom Tov. So the Mishnah in Beitza and the Shulchan Aruch Pascha is that when it's not allowed to create a new fire on Yom Tov, you can't light a match, you can't strike a match on Yom Tov. What you can do is take a match and light from a pre-existing fire. But you can't strike a match. You can't turn on a new fire. Why is that aser? So most poskim assume, the way the Mishnah Berurah explained, most poskim assume that's an issur d'rabbanan. Minatar, it's really mutter. If it's l'tzorech hayom, why should it be aser? Minatar, it's really mutter. The problem is, Chazal always will go there. Chazal said that you're not allowed to create new things, both on Shabbos and Yom Tov. L'mashal, a person is not allowed to create ice cubes on Shabbos. Now they say that if it's a tzorach gadol, a great need, a person has guests coming and they ran out of ice cubes, they didn't realize they prepared Erev Shabbos, they ran out. Suppose you might be willing to be mekel, it's only an issur d'rabbanan to begin with, but l'chatchila one is not supposed to make ice cubes on Shabbos. Why? Because you're creating something new, you're changing states. You're changing the state of water from liquid to solid. So similarly, a person is not supposed to light a fire anew, not from a pre-existing fire, Mishnah Berurah explains, because that's like molid esh mechadosh, you're creating a new fire. Midrabbanan, that's going to be us. Of course, by the way, just parenthetically, since it's only midrabbanan, to get a goy to do it, if it's a tzorach hayom, might be mutter, because again, that's a shvus to shvus, it's a double midrabbanan. The whole issur to create the new fire is only midrabbanan, to ask the goy to do it is only midrabbanan. So it's a double derabanan, and that perhaps might be mutter on Yom Tov. So the problem is, if you light an electric stove, since the coils are going to be, either if you raise the stove or if you lower the stove, new coils are going to be lit. The way that it extinguishes the fire is by creating a resistance with the new coils. So that's going to be a problem, because lighting electricity or turning on electricity, we assume is an eish mecharesh. We assume that's new fire. You should know it wasn't always like this. About 30, 40 years ago, people used to be mekel that on Yom Tov they would turn on electric lights. Gedolim used to do this. Yireim u'shleimim used to have a minute. They would turn on electric light. They never turn off the light on Yom Tov, but they would turn it on. Because turning it off is not a tzarech hayom. But they would turn on the light on Yom Tov and leave it on. Because they thought that the electric current is somehow in the transformer, somehow it's stored in some place, and they were just drawing that current. That's like drawing fire from a pre-existing fire. Nowadays, no poskim amegel for that. Poskim found out more about electricity. They realized what electricity really is. And poskim are more inclined to say that using electricity is like creating a new fire. So therefore, nowadays you really won't find anyone who's able to turn on electric lights or something. But it's quite interesting. This idea, you know, played out in a very interesting way not so long ago, only 30, 40 years ago. So that's the only thing to keep in mind, that you have to be careful that you use a gas stove. If you have electric ignition in your stove, or if the stove is electric in general, it's very problematic to raise or lower the temperature. You can use an electric stove as long as you don't change the temperature. But to lower or to raise the temperature of an electric stove on Yom Tov is highly questionable. One always forgets, I should conclude by saying, that people forget, they're so involved with the halachos of Yom Tov. Some are more megel, some think it's all lenient. There is confusion, but people forget that there's a mitzvah simchas Yom Tov. Yom Tov is a time when we're supposed to enjoy the Yom Tov. So it's important to know all of these halachos of what a person is supposed to do, but ultimately, the goal of the Yom Tov is to have simchas Yom Tov, to enjoy the Yom Tov, to thank Hashem for everything He's given us. So we should be zocha with all of the halachas that we've learned. We should be zocha to a year that is a lot of mazel and bracha, shnas chaim v'shalom, and together we should be zocha to see the ultimate geula in Erev Yomim.
Thank you very much for coming, sir. Everyone get signed.